Hey, welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. Kick off the show here with what's going on in the college campuses and a follow-up to yesterday where Steve from Tennessee called in and his son doesn't know whether he wants to go to marine biology or become a welder. I've just been thinking about it all day, all day long yesterday I've been thinking about it. So I just got some thoughts here, at least some preliminary thoughts. We ended up doing a little bit more in the 8 o'clock hour as well. But here's the latest what's happening on college campuses, followed up with a little bit of thinking through big career decisions. But it's not just, I mean, for this kid, it's a career decision. He's 18. But for all of us, it's just daily life decisions as well should be run by these same filters. So hope it's relevant. I think it's relevant to everyone. Protests on campus. It's the new Black Lives Matter. And right before the election, perfect timing. So it's ramping up across the country. University of Texas, we'll see how UT handles this. They sent an email to students giving a notice of dispersal order. It's not just Columbia and Yale now. University of Texas, I command you in the name of the people of the state of Texas to disperse. If you do not, you shall be arrested for violation of Penal Code Section 4201, disorderly conduct, 4202, riot, 4203, obstructing a highway. So we'll see how that goes at University of Texas. USC, whatever, schools across Minnesota, schools all over the country now. These pro-Palestine protests. We'll see when they turn into full-blown riots, like Black Lives Matter style. So I think this is pretty cool. Speaker Johnson, who we've been pretty hard on, last couple of weeks, he went to Columbia. That's like a bit surreal, actually. It's like, oh wow, he like actually spoke in a microphone to the students of Columbia. He said, he was in front of the big library there. He said, in this very building right behind us, Columbia University once awarded Winston Churchill an honorary degree, and it was Churchill who said, "It is manifestly right that Jews should have a national home where they may be reunited. We believe in that principle. And today I'm here to proclaim to all those who gnash their teeth and demand to wipe the state of Israel off the map and attack our innocent Jewish students, this simple truth: neither Israel nor these Jewish students on this campus will ever stand alone." And there's a bunch of videos of students and teachers too, students and professors screaming, "Get the blank off our campus." I want to play a couple minutes here because I'm actually pretty impressed that the Republicans actually went to Columbia, kind of like interjected themselves into this story and taking a stand, a bit of an offensive posture, which I appreciate and want to encourage. And I think this is all pretty good here. So this is, we'll play 2 minutes of this. This is Speaker Johnson. This is more of the Q&A part at the end.
"At the start of the American Revolution, the doors of this institution, once known as King's College, were closed. When the war ended, the institution reopened and was renamed Columbia College. It was a shift from the tyranny of the monarchy to the freedom at the heart of the American experiment. And now the forces of hatred and oppression once again are on the march. They've begun to try to close Columbia's doors to a segment of students. To every Jewish student listening to us, no matter where you are around the country, you have my word. The U.S. House of Representatives will do everything in our power to ensure that you are safe, you can freely practice your faith, and you can go to school just like everybody else. We will punish those who have allowed this violence and bigotry to go unchecked." With that, I'll take a few questions.
Mr. Speaker, what about the anti-Zionist Jews in the camp celebrating Shabbat?
We met briefly with the president and her top officials right before we came out on the steps here. We encouraged her to take immediate action and stamp this out. And our feeling is that they have not acted to restore order on the campus. This is dangerous. This is not free expression. This is not First Amendment. They are threatening, intimidating, saying that they will take violence upon Jewish students. We met with Jewish students who are in fear. They can't come on campus. They can't study for their final exams. This affects everybody's lives, and it affects the image that we portray to the world. This is not who we are as Americans, and it's time to act like
Have you spoken to the president about bringing in the National Guard? A number of senators have done that. Are you urging the president to do that as well?
My intention is to call President Biden after we leave here and share with him what we have seen with our own two eyes and demand that he take action. There is executive authority that be appropriate. If this is not contained quickly, and if these threats and intimidation are not stopped, there is an appropriate time for the National Guard. We have to bring order to these campuses. We cannot allow this to happen around the country. We are better than this. We are better than this, and I'll ask the president to do that, and I'll tell him that very same thing.
Mr. Speaker, what is the House going to do? So you moved some things, you've done, what is your plan when you get back?
The House has been investigating a number of these campuses. There is a nexus to federal funding. If these campuses cannot get control of this problem, they do not deserve taxpayer dollars. That's a very serious issue. You've seen our Education and Workforce Committee having oversight hearings. We have brought the presidents of these universities to Congress to testify under oath, and you've seen accountability begun there. There'll be much more of that. We'll continue to work on legislation to adjust this at the federal level. This Congress, and I genuinely believe there's bipartisan agreement on this, will stand for what is good and what is right. It does not matter who shouts in our faces. We're going to do what is right by America. We respect free speech. We respect diversity of ideas. But there is a way to do that in a lawful manner, and that's not what this is.
That's all pretty good. I saw a poll asking about support of military funding for Israel. And among 65 plus, a 21% strongly oppose. But among 18 to 29 young people, it's 45% oppose. So it's just a massive generational shift right there of young people who hate Israel. This is Scott Galloway. We played a clip of him yesterday, and I went back and watched the whole interview, and it's all really good, this guy. So he's a NYU professor. I said he was Berkeley. I think he was at Berkeley, and now he's at NYU.
And I do think there is a double standard. I walked by NYU last night. What I saw.
Sorry, 2X. Slow it down here. Here we go.
I do think there is a double standard. I walked by NYU last night. What I saw was peaceful protest. But I can tell you, if I went into the NYU square with a white hood on and said, lynch the blacks or burn the gays, my ID would be shut off by that night. And I would never work in academia again. There would be no need for the words context or nuance. I wouldn't be protected by terms like First Amendment or free speech. I would be out of the world of academia. It seems like we have a double standard when it comes to hate speech, as long as it's against Jews.
And we're not just talking about the exercising of free speech and protest, which we agree people have, and there are spaces on campus for that. It's what they're saying is the harassment of Jewish students. So what is that? Why is there that double standard? Because of course you're right. You don't even have to say it out loud. If these things were being said about black people or gay people or Latinos or Asian or anybody else, forget it. Shut down the school. Everybody's expelled. Why is there still that double standard?
I think it's complicated. I think, one, young people have a healthy gag reflex on what people our age think, and I think that's healthy. Two, I don't think Israel has draped itself in glory over the last 20 or 30 years. They've shifted from being kind of the David to the Goliath. I also think that incorrectly students on campus conflate the civil rights movement with what is going on in Palestine and have digressed, unfortunately, because of an orthodoxy promoted by me and my colleagues that there are oppressors and oppressed, and the easiest way to identify oppressors is how white and how rich they are, or fairly or unfairly, Israel is seen as ground zero for whiteness and how wealthy they are. And then what might sound paranoid, but doesn't mean I'm wrong. I think we are being manipulated, specifically youth, who their frame for the world is TikTok. And if you look at TikTok, there are 52 videos that are pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian for every one served on Israel. I think that we are being manipulated. I think Americans are easier to fool than convince they've been fooled. But if I were the CCP, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. I think social media is sowing division and polarization in our society.
Worth noting that the ban TikTok bill passed the House, died in the Senate. Then they, in the House, they attached it to the Ukraine and Israel bill. And Biden just signed it yesterday. So the TikTok ban has passed and been signed. And my understanding is that China has pretty much a year to ban, to sell TikTok, or it's banned. I don't know. I don't see why they would sell it. It's not like China needs the money. I don't know why they would sell, but Maybe we could talk to an expert.
Thought I had saw something about the CEO say he was going to sue.
Surely, right?
Like, how does that gum up the works?
Yeah. Could they sue it within the year still? You know?
Can they wait a year and then be like, we're suing you? LOL.
Yeah. And then drag it out for another year after that. Years, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. If you make money on TikTok, I think you'll be all right for a while. Unfortunately. I think I'm still for a ban. Anyway, that's the TikTok element to it. That civil rights part is profound. So I think I was of the first generation where the civil rights movement was written about in the history books in such a way that it was portrayed to young people that this is the greatest thing that ever happened in the history of mankind. And you need to do everything you can to be like them. You need to be the civil rights movement again. You need to go find your own new civil rights movement. You need to be like Selma. And I've heard the argument, and I forget who coined the term. I could picture him in my head. Oh, darn, I forgot who coined it. But he coined the term Selma envy. Selma envy. And it was millennials who took up the mantle of gay marriage and turned gay marriage into their new civil rights movement. And it was a great civil rights movement to pick up. It was a great cause of the oppressed to pick up gay marriage because gay people had a lot of money, so you didn't have to give any money. You supporting gay marriage, you didn't have to be a more moral person. You didn't have to live differently. So it was all like a very easy. Millennials is the beginning of all the social media stuff. So you didn't have to do anything. All you had to do is change your Facebook profile picture to a rainbow flag or something. And you're some sort of hero on the bridge of Selma. So it was great. You didn't have to donate any money. You didn't have to change your life. You didn't have to do anything. And you could still be just like the civil rights heroes of Selma. And I think now that all civil rights issues have been resolved, young people who still feel the need to lead a movement of the oppressed have chosen the Palestinians, who they know nothing about at all. Guys, did Dershowitz say tomorrow or Monday? I want to talk to him more about that point. So they know nothing about the Palestinians, of course. But that's their cause. Let me play one last background clip, and then I want to do a better job of answering a question that came up on the show yesterday. So this is on CNN. I don't know who this woman is, but they're talking about the protest.
With you.
Oh, wait, hold on. Right here.
Many people have said that the action of bringing police into a group of people who are already feeling that they are sort of representative of the oppressed, who are inspired by what happened with George Floyd in 2020 and seeing what is happening in Gaza, that has only really acted as a catalyst here. And so I wonder at the wisdom of bringing in the armed police into what is essentially a university campus. There,
I love it. So good. I love it. That's such a good argument. The oppressed students of Columbia University. I'm guessing their acceptance rate is 5%. So the oppressed students at Columbia can do whatever they want. And if you dare bring in the police, that's triggering. It's triggering to them. Why? Because of the solidarity they feel with George Floyd. So I question the wisdom of having anyone there or anything there to enforce the law. That's great. All right, so that's all the background stuff. Caught up. This isn't going away, and it's I wonder if it could stick around to the election. I wonder if this is, I think it'll stick around or at least simmer under the surface until the Democratic convention. That's August. Is that what we said yesterday, Zach? August?
Yes.
$89,000 a year to go to Columbia. I'm so oppressed. So this will go till August, and it'll really mess up the Democrat convention. That's for sure. So we'll see how violent it gets, though. Right? We'll see if it ever turns as violent, like burning buildings to the ground, as Black Lives Matter was. I don't know if it'll get there. We'll see. So I will 866-95 Patriot. If you have anything to add to what we've just presented this morning. 866-95 Patriot. I was consumed yesterday by all the calls we had at the end of the show, but especially, I believe it was Steve from Tennessee. We may have had three Steve from Tennessee's calling yesterday, so I'm a little confused about which Steve it was. I think it was Steve, though. And we were talking all about the craziness on college campuses. And as I was introing and making a point, I said, hey, how are your kids doing? This is at 8 o'clock. I said, how are your kids doing? Are they on college campus now? What are they seeing? What's happening? And it was a mix of calls. Some people called in and said, hey, my kids are actually doing great. We had a couple calls, though, of people being like, man, my daughter has gone astray. I got a few emails that we could probably share tomorrow of like really sad stories. Really sad stories. And you could hear it in the parents' voice. Like, oh. It was a very, like, I thought we did everything right. We didn't see what the big deal was. You know, we thought it'd be okay. And then she just got caught up in this friend group at the University of Tennessee, you know. And now she's a totally different person. It's like, oh, man, like my heart breaks for that. You have 18 years. You have 18 years. And less as the years go on, right? You have total control over your kids for the first five, and then a little bit less every single year. And then they're 18 and they're off. And we just drop them off in the pit of vipers. And it might be the last bad decision you make as a parent of a minor child. My kids are 7 and under, and I constantly make bad decisions. I'm making bad decisions all day. And sending them to Columbia might be the last bad one. And then they're adults. So Steve called in. Does that make sense? Like, you can just hear that in parents' voices. Just this is like, oh, I can't believe what happened. So Steve called in and said his high school senior son is deciding between college to go off to be a marine biologist. But that's irrelevant. How many people go off to college knowing what they want to do and then end up doing that actual thing? So, but whatever, we'll play the game. Marine biologist. So he wants to work at SeaWorld or something. I don't know what marine biologists do. The only thing I can think of marine biologist is a dolphin trainer. So I'm sure marine biologists do other things. By the way, in San Diego, you used to be able to take a jet ski tour past where the Navy trains dolphins to detect underwater bombs and... I don't know if I can say this, but the dolphins have been trained to attack. They have a weapon on them. The Navy dolphins have weapons, in a way. But anyway, it's pretty cool. So if you wanted to go to college and be a marine biologist to go train dolphin warriors, that's cool. But if you're gonna be a marine biologist to go and study whatever the sea urchins or something. I don't know. You're like, I don't know. Anyway, he wants to be a marine biologist. So he wants to be a college man or go to trade school and be a welder. So those are the two options. And I think these are the real options, but they're also metaphors. So do you go to college and be a marine biologist? The joke we always used to make in college is you go to Camp Ho-Ho, which is Hobart. You go to Hobart College, Camp Ho-Ho, and major in underwater basket weaving. Or do you go to trade school and be a welder? That was the question. And this dad was struggling with this. You could tell this was dinner table conversation every day. And we got right after that. We opened up the phones. It was great. We got a bunch of calls from welders. We're like, hey, we're making a ton of money out here. We had an airplane mechanic call in. He says kids are making $65 an hour. Airplane mechanic is about $130,000 a year. And I had no advice at the time. I was a bit overwhelmed by the question, actually. It's a big life decision. I look forward to talking to Dr. Gorka. I'll ask him about it, get his advice. But I thought about it a lot yesterday. I thought about it all day yesterday. And of course, we don't know all the variables involved. I don't have all the data. But I think I came up with an answer. Let me take a break. We'll take a break and we'll chat about this as a family here. 866-95-PATRIOT. 866-95-PATRIOT. What do you do? What do you suggest your kids to do today? Go to college and be a basket weaver. No, not a marine biologist. Sorry, marine biologist. Or go to trade school, be a welder. It's a shame, the timing of it. For a long time, you didn't have to go to college. And then there was this period of history, I don't know, from 1980 on or something, where you had to go to college. You were nothing if you didn't go to college. You're not going to go to college. Oh, you have to go to college. And that we're coming out of that, but we're not yet out of it, right? We're close, maybe in 10 more years. Maybe 10 more years, it'll be like, oh, like you definitely don't have to go to college. And right, that's where we need to be. But we're just not quite there yet. So if you're wondering if you should send your kids to college or not now, like, oh, do you still need it? Like, it's a horrible place to go in ways. It's a potentially dangerous place to send your kids. It could be like a violently dangerous, like a physically dangerous place, depending. But like, you still kind of need the degree, depending on what you're doing. It's a shame that that's still the case you're in right now, but you can't pause for 10 years and then figure it out. You got to make a decision for what the situation is now. All right, I thought about it all day yesterday. You got a high school senior. Do you go to college and become a marine biologist, or do you go to trade school and become a welder? And what each of those majors represent as well. Of course, not knowing all the variables. If you're not passionate about college, and if there's not a very specific reason to go, like I want to be a doctor or something like that, then don't force it. I don't see a reason to force college unless you really, really want to go. You can still read books. You can read any book you want. You can read any Shakespeare play you want. And you're like, I can't read Shakespeare. There's online courses you can take. If you want to do all that stuff, you can learn whatever you want to learn in the world. You don't need to pay $90,000 a year for it. And all the professors of the top colleges have their lectures all online for free. And the benefit of that is you can watch the lecture. You can read the books if you so desire. And you don't have to write any research papers. You don't have to write a 20-page paper double-spaced where you change the tabs so that your 17-page paper turns into a 19-and-a-half-page paper. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to do all that nonsense. You just learn for the sake of learning. But if you have a deep, profound passion for English literature that you must devour all of, then, yeah, I guess you go to college. But short those things, no, just skip it. Go to trade school. And here's my reason why. Your trade school job, it's not going to go anywhere. Big demand, hard work. Now, a lot of guys who are making a lot of money, the reason they're making a lot of money is because they're putting in a lot of overtime. So it's just welding. It's hot, long, tough hours. You're traveling away from your wife and family. That's all hard. So I guess I would just tell my son, you got to think about the life you want to live. Start there and then find some career that fits into that. Maybe it's not welding. Maybe it's airplane mechanic. Maybe they have better hours or something. Maybe they don't travel as much if you're an air. So you're not away from the family as much as something like that. But there's plenty of other trades too. But here's the best part about a trade, I think. You're actually building a real life thing. There's something very powerful about that. There's something very rewarding about that. You're making something real. You're building something. There's something, I would argue, spiritually, well, there's something missing in our society in that regard, but there's something spiritually necessary about that for you as an individual and for us as a country to be a person who builds and creates. Do you know what I'm trying to say? It's It's if you build things, it's important not only because of the thing that was built, but also the type of man that is built in the process of building. Are you with me? I think being a man who does manly things is becoming more and more in demand. And I don't even just mean welders are in demand for building a building. And they are. We had a guy calling yesterday whose son owns a welding company and can't find enough welders. So yes, welders are in demand. But I also think welders are in demand for being men in a country that needs men. We need a country with strong men in it again. Our country needs more welders as a metaphor. We need more welders. You tracking? Our country became a country because we were a country of farmers. And there are very few farmers today. But we need to tap back into that. We're not winning a war because we have the most white-collar workers. We're not winning wars because we have a lot of radio show hosts. We're not winning wars because we have more radio show hosts than China has. Oh, we got a lot of calls. Let me try to finish this point here. And I want to take some calls. Just a second ago, we played a clip of Scott Galloway. And he was talking about Israel and the protests and stuff. But he's a money guy. He's got a new book called The Algebra of Wealth. And I know nothing about it. I've never heard of him before. But it seems like he does a pretty good job of taking the economic realities and analyzing it, not only what that means for the economy, but what that means from a sociological perspective as well. For instance, a line like this. He says the biggest loss of capital will be the human capital of young men who used to do young men strong things and instead are now sitting and staring at their phone watching the price of Bitcoin or the price of AMC, like stocks. Ask yourself, would you be better off taking that 1, 2, or 3 hours a day and working out, trying to form a relationship, romantic relations, getting great at something so that you can be the person on the other side of the trade? I think you are going to see an explosion in young male depression. Young men today are playing video games, addicted to video games, addicted to porn, and going to college, maybe simulating hard work with a sport, but that's just simulation. That's not really enough. And I think living that kind of life as a man, the one I lived, I think it was workable for the last 40 years, but I don't think we as a country can go on like that. We were in the good times, make weak men thing, and I think now we're in the weak men, and we're going to need, right, the weak men make bad times, and we're going to need the strong men to make the good times again. Now, I'm not saying, of course, you can't be a strong, virtuous man and a marine biologist. I wonder if there's a marine biologist listening now who's like, whoa, Slater, you have no idea. Like, not all marine biologists are a bunch of pansies on the seashore picking up seashells. I'm a marine biologist and I dive every day and I'm deep in the ocean doing cool stuff. Yeah, like, sure. But a welder is a pretty surefire path towards being that strong man as well. Anyway, I want to play this last clip of Scott Galloway.
For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People aged 30 to 34, 60% of them in 1990 had one child. Now it's 27%. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids. Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off. Mm-hmm. They look up, they see wealth, exceptional wealth across my generation and people in certain industries, And they are really struggling. Their purchasing power is going down. And the incumbents create artificial scarcity on campus. We take pride in rejecting 90% of our applicants. So the incumbents who already have a degree see their degree go up in value. We get very concerned with housing and traffic once we own the housing. Housing permits are sequestered from young people. Housing prices have gone from 290 to 420 in the last 4 years. So a young person, a house, stocks that I don't own skyrocket in value. Let's have COVID relief and flush the markets and take assets way up, because if a million people dying would be bad, would be tragic if I got less wealthy. And we're doing it on their credit card. Young people have every reason to be enraged, and every issue they see, they look up, they get angry, and they see someone doing better than them. And then every day it is speedballed in their face that they are failing, that they are not doing as well as everyone around them. We have lost the script. Our kids are more anxious and more depressed and more obese and more addicted. And we have made a purposeful decision to let this happen by ensuring the people around this table stay wealthy at the cost of young people. So,
how about that last line? We've made a purposeful decision to let this happen so the people around this table can stay wealthy at the cost of young people. There's a lot there. Let me wrap up here. I have a ton more to say. I can ramble on about this forever, but I want to take your calls. I think that a young man who goes into the trades and builds things and gets good at it, I think is a more desirable husband for the type of woman that you would want to be your wife, which is the most important decision you'll make in your life, is who you marry, next to becoming a Christian. It's the most important decision you'll make. I think a welder, recognizing how hard it is and how many of these trade jobs just crush your body, I think being a welder makes a certain kind of man that you will be more proud to be. And I think it makes a certain kind of man that our country needs more of. That's my answer. Go to Brian, who's in Ohio. What's going on, Brian?
Mike, don't sell yourself short. You are a way better host than anything China has to offer.
But if it was a one-on-one battle between me and the best host of China, this show would be way better.
Yes, sir. Anyhow, I'm a business owner. I talked to you quite a few times. I got a trucking company. I got 8 trucks. My son went to trade school to become a diesel mechanic. He's a certified diesel mechanic. He brought that trade home. Taught it to my younger son, who just recently took his ASC certification.
Cool.
I pay my son, it's probably less than what most diesel mechanics make. I pay him $37 an hour, but it is what it is. It's a small family-run company. My daughter, on the other hand, she went to college for business management, and I don't even remember what the stupid number she racked up, even though it was community college. She was able to pay her own bills, though. She works for my company. She runs my front office.
Yes.
And I pay her a salary of $75 a year. Again, it's a small business, and she's happy. Everybody's happy. To the tune of what you were saying about the type of man you are is like the type of woman that you're going to marry, or the type of man you're proud to be. Let me tell you what. My son is 6'3". And he walks with the stature of a 12-foot man.
Yeah, because he can fix things, right? He can get his hands into an engine and build it and make it work. You're going to walk tall if you do that.
There's a million parts changers out there. He's not that. He's not afraid to work with other people. He's not afraid to pass his knowledge on. You know, some people, you know, they don't want to tell you anything, like it's all secret squirrel. It's like, look, dude, I'm not applying for your job. I just asked you for a little bit of help. My son, on the other hand, he will gladly tell you everything he knows because it's going to make his job easier at the end of the day.
So what's your advice to the man with his senior in high school son?
I would say, you know, you kind of back off a little bit. You can only do the best that you can do. Like Dennis Prager said one time, I didn't break you, so how am I supposed to fix you? So, I mean, you got to kind of, you know, stand in there, and all you can do is give advice. I mean, You're an adult. You're going to do what you're going to do anyways.
Yeah, that's right. No, and I think he recognizes. Yeah, I think the dad recognizes that. That's why he's like, what can I even do? Is maybe the subtext to the question.
You got to hope for the best. Yeah. You can't, belittle. Oh, you want to go be a marine biologist? No, it ain't like that. It's like, oh, cool. If you want to go be a marine biologist, you be the best damn marine biologist there is.
Well, that part's for sure. And you be the most blue collar marine. You know what I mean? Like you be that marine biologist who does the
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And I think Brian, I appreciate the call, man. I think that's right. And just to emphasize that point, I think the dad who called in yesterday, it was a what should I do? But I think there was also a little bit of like, what can I even do? It's like, but I don't know. I don't know what the son wants too. Maybe I should talk to the senior high school, get his head, see where his head's at with it all as well. But are you with me? Let me say that sentence again. I don't know if this sentence is right or not. If you're a welder, would you be a more desirable husband for the type of woman that you would want to be your wife? Is that a true sentence? Obviously not always, not necessarily, et cetera, et cetera. But I think law of averages, I think that'd probably be true. Shannon called in. She just hung up though, but on the call screen log here, it says that she's in food service and 1 in 3 of the people in food service have college degrees. And it's like, oh yeah, that's what we're trying to avoid here. That's what you don't want. That's the waste of money that we definitely don't need here. But real quick on the emasculating part, my wife, she was driving the van the other day and got a flat tire. And it was just down the street and drove over and was fixing it. And I chuckled because I was like, how'd this happen? And she's like, I don't know. But she knew. And I'm in the middle of changing it. And she goes, maybe it had something to do with me hitting the curb. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Might have. This gash in the side of it? We'll never know. For sure. But she knew that's what it was. But just the way she said it, I was like, maybe it did? Anyway, I was changing it. And 3 people stopped to ask if I needed help. Now, a couple different things could have been occurring there. And they were all in trucks, and one was in like an ATV for some reason in the middle of the street. So I had a guy in an ATV and 2 guys in a truck. Now, a couple things could have happened. First of all, I could have been the recipient of some good old Southern hospitality. You know what I mean? Helping out a fella on the side of the road. Or these gentlemen could have seen a dainty little guy who clearly looked like he needed help. Now, I tried to look as confident as possible as I was fixing the tire. No problem here. Plus, I had all my kids watching me. So I had to do a very quick and efficient job. But maybe these 3 gentlemen saw me from a mile away and said, that guy needs help. I can tell. Look at him. Look at him with his soft, dainty hands. He's probably like a radio host or something. But I fixed it. And I was the hero. But I wonder about the man who just feel about the, how would the man feel who can't do it? Can't change the tire. You with me on the metaphor? You don't want to be that guy. That's for sure. And I think for a long time, we've been able to get away with you could be that guy. Just call AAA and that guy will come and do it for you. Right. But I think we're going to get to a time when you need to be that guy. And our country desperately needs those guys. So that's a new reason why I would push the trade school. Go to Nick, who's in Long Island. What's up, Nick?
What's up, Mike? How's it going?
Good, man. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. I do auto repair at a dealership. 28 years, and we don't have people joining this industry. At all.
Where are you finding people? Or are you just not even?
Local colleges actually have like automotive programs where they learn and they kind of get placed. But you know, it's entry level stuff, so they learn. Some guys, it's obvious they have what it takes, but it's the generation. They just don't want to work.
Yeah. So yeah. That's, so why are people not doing it?
It's difficult. It ain't easy.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta know every system on the car, and technology changes every 6 months. You know, and it's all the bells and whistles people want in their cars that, oh, it does this and it does that for me, and it's automatic, and you know, you got to know how to fix that stuff when it doesn't work, and yeah. It's complicated.
And it's a job that AI will never replace, so we need it more than ever.
Yeah.
How are we going to get people to do it though? Like, how much is the pay? Is that the first thing that kids say when they come to your shop? I need the money.
Not so much the pay. You know, you got to earn, you know, your salary basically. But the automotive industry also, we get paid per time. Every job on the car has a certain amount of time that it should take you to do it. And yeah. Then you're paid that amount of time. So like a brake job, changing pads and rotors is an hour and a half. If it takes you 2 hours, you still get paid the hour and a half.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So you gotta be efficient. Yeah. You gotta be swift as well.
Yeah. So you have to get it right the first time and fix it and hopefully make a little bit of time.
Yeah, that's good. Nick, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much. It's funny. We had a guy from Mississippi calling yesterday and then Nick from Long Island, both with wonderful accents. And one of my great laments is that we're losing accents in this country. And I hope that's never the case. Nick, I hope you and your progeny keep the offspring. Yeah, I mean, that's the root of it, right? No one wants to work. But if you are that person, and to Stephen Tennessee's son who maybe wants to be a welder too, like if you are that person and you do want to do that work, again, like there's so few of you, you can do it and stand out in such a profound way. Bright Part News Daily. Every Thursday, we talk to the great Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. We appreciate it very much. Gorka, did I see the Gorka man? Yes, stand up, Gorka. Quick, get up. How good is he, Sebastian? Seb. They call him Seb. I call him Sebastian. Thank you, Sebastian. I just spotted you. It's lucky you're nice and tall.
Every email I get about Dr. Sebastian Gorka, they refer to him as the Gorka man. Dr. Gorka, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, my friend. How are we doing this fine day?
Fantastic. I have to ask you a question, sir, on behalf of a listener we had yesterday. If you could give your advice, how you would advise him to advise his son. So we were talking about college campuses yesterday, everything that's going on, and obviously I'm going to ask you about that. But as I was musing about it yesterday, I said, hey, does anyone have any college campus experiences? Like, let me know what's going on, your kids, whatever. And we had some people who called in and said they're going great. Their kids are making it out alive. We had a couple sad stories, and I got a bunch of emails from parents whose daughters in particular are totally different people now. And they have great lament and regrets, which is really sad. But we had a gentleman call in, Steve from Tennessee, whose high school senior son doesn't know, and they don't know, if they should go to college. He wants to be a marine biologist, for whatever that's worth. Who, you know, what high schooler knows what they want to be? But all right, so we'll go with it. And I think that's a metaphor, right? He wants to be a marine biologist in college, or go to trade school and be a welder. What would your advice be to these parents of this young man?
Well, congratulations first on having a young man who has such specificity in his expectations. We need more welders in America. I mean, I'll start with that. And we need less people going to college to learn useless things or become indoctrinated into chant from the river to the sea. I look at people like Charlie Kirk, who never went to college, who became incredibly successful, autodidact, incredibly intelligent as well. And I see the argument for not spending hundreds and thousands of dollars and risking getting a useless piece of paper or losing your child to the left. You know, sarcastically, my advice is go and work in the Trump White House and then see what happens to your kids, because, you know, my son survived 4 years at Stanford as a rock-ribbed conservative because of what they did to me and to my family when I was in the White House. But you know, seriously, those are two very interesting options. He can flip a coin, or he can try to see what it's like in college, and then if he doesn't like it, go to that trade school and learn welding. But, you know, he actually has a cornucopia of choices there, so he's actually in a better position than most.
Yeah, I think debt is a huge concern, but almost the least of the concerns of what could happen to your son on a college campus these days. We'll talk, I don't know if we'll get tomorrow or the next day, we'll talk about the Title IX changes that have happened on college campuses as well. So your son could be accused of rape and their life destroyed. I mean, there's a risk.
The horror stories I heard, it's just, you know, I'm not pro crazy sex life and promiscuity in college, but the stories my son and his friends on his rowing team told me about how it's like you're constantly walking on eggshells. You know, the numbers of times he actually escorted drunken girls home just so something wouldn't happen that she wouldn't regret with somebody else the next day, and then accuse his friend of, you know, doing something untoward, and then he'd be kicked out of the college. The whole relationship between men and women, I don't know how they function, and well, we know how they function. We see the chronic rates of you know, serious relationships and the fear that each sex has of each other. What has feminism brought us? And when are women going to wake up? The first, second, third, fourth, fifth wave feminism has created two, and it will soon be three generations of women who will just be sad and alone by the time they hit their 40s. I mean, it's horrific. What is the long-term demographic effect on Western civilization from feminism? We have yet to know, but it will not be good, my friend.
We talked about this in the first hour, because I've the last 24 hours, all I've thought is Steve from Tennessee. One of the reasons I suggested the welding, or why that could be a good choice, is because that could turn you into the type of man that the woman you would want to marry would be attracted to.
Yeah. There's something, you know, and I don't want to get too philosophical, but there's something deeply spiritual about a human being, about a man who can make things with his hands. Mm-hmm. You know, the woman provides us with life, nurtures a newborn inside her for 9 months. There's nothing that comes close to that for a man. But to actually, I used to do this as a kid. I had a hobby. I used to restore guns, so I used to be not too bad at metalwork and woodwork. But, you know, today I just sit in front of a microphone for 3 hours a day. So I'm exactly creating stuff with my hands. But to actually make things, it's good for the soul. It's good for your sense of who you are as a human being. So, yeah, I mean, even if he wants to be the marine biologist, learn the welding on the side. Work for somebody as a tradesman, as an apprentice at the weekend. You know what one of my greatest memories is, Mike, as a child, is my parents, we didn't have a lot of money, but I never knew it, right? It's one of those cases where, you know, my parents just made sure that I had everything. So my dad never, as long as I knew him, he never had a new car. The car we had for the longest was a 20-year-old Mercedes with the fins on the back. What were my fondest memories of my childhood? Saturday morning, what would I be doing? I'd be with my father tinkering on his car, fixing the rust spots, taking out the plugs, checking the gaps, or cleaning the points. That stays with me because it's real, and it's also a bonding experience with my father. It was working with our hands, getting our hands dirty, fixing something, and that was so glorious, and I'll never forget it.
But my hands as a radio show host are very soft and delicate, Dr. Gorka. So smooth.
You gotta find a hobby, dude. my thing is I'm desperate to learn how to knife to make knives. My brother-in-law he's one of these guys who is so ADHD, he always has a new hobby. He went from growing bonsais to mountain biking. And then he taught himself from scratch with a smelter, with everything, how to make hunting knives. He made me one. Absolutely beautiful. Carved with a handle.
That's
beautiful.
Cool.
D2 blade. You know, every man can do that. Every man should have something that is physical creation that they do on the side, whatever the day job is. Even if you're a, you know, even if you're a neuroscientist, brain surgeon, you know, do some bonsai clipping at the weekend.
That's great. If one chooses to go on these college campuses, particularly Columbia, but now it's everywhere. Now it's, you know, USC and University of Texas and Minnesota, it's everywhere. What are you seeing that disturbs you the most about what's happening at these places? Surely, you know, no one's surprised anymore, but.
I don't think there's anything that, how about this? It disturbs me the most is submission to the indoctrination. I mean, just mindless, unthinking submission. I have to give full credit. Last week, I was invited to American University by the New College Republicans, and this is allegedly, according to a recent study, the wokest college in America.
Oh, wow.
I was very disappointed. The lunatics didn't come and heckle me. We had some great police officers there, but they didn't even show up. I guess it was past their bedtime. And one of the best questions I got in the Q&A, so Luke and everybody else, thank you for inviting me, is they asked me their advice. What advice would I give them at a super woke college as Republicans? And I told them, look, my job is very different from theirs. You know, my job is to be a flamethrower and to keep the MAGA base mobilized and optimistic. They have to choose their battles. Don't walk into every classroom as if, you know, you're expecting that this is the day that the professor is going to throw you out because of your opinions. Mm-hmm. However, even though you choose your battles, you've got to cleave to the truth. You've got to cleave to the truth and try as much as you can not to censor yourself. Push back where possible, bide your time where necessary, but at the end of the day, keep the flame of truth alive. That's my advice to anyone who has a child or who is in that position.
I think that's right. An interesting narrative is unfolding on these college campuses. I've seen it twice now, and here's AOC. That as these protesters are gaining energy, it's like the Black Lives Matter of today, right before an election as well, surely lasting until Chicago. Could you believe the Democrats are having their convention in Chicago of all
How
places?
How dumb are they? I mean, the SDS and Students for Democratic Society screwed up the last time they went there. The days of rage fizzled out like a wet firework, and then they're doing it there again. I mean, what cretins. Have they opened a history booklet lately?
Maybe they want it. But I've heard this narrative that let me read AOC. Not only did Columbia make the horrific decision to mobilize the NYPD on their own students, but the units called in have some of the most violent reputations on the force. So it was the NYPD counterterrorism units. At least some of the guys have that on their jackets. NYPD has promised the city they wouldn't deploy SRG to protests. So why are these counterterror units here? So there's this idea that the police shouldn't be involved in what they're doing.
Of course, I mean, the police should be defunded. But let me ask you a question, because, you know, I'm on the show every day. I keep the TV running, muted in the background as I'm on air. And I see this constant coverage from the conservative media, the campuses. And I asked my team yesterday, and I got a surprising answer. Do you think these pro-Hamas protests will actually matter on November 5th? Because I doubted it. But what do you think?
Will it matter to whom? Will it have an out? Will it affect the outcome?
Will it have a positive impact on the good guys winning the election November 5th?
Yeah, I think it's weird. It's interesting. I think it's a horrible thing for our country. I think it's wildly relevant to Steve from Tennessee, who's deciding whether or not his children should go to these schools or not. And it's contributing to the downfall of these universities, which ultimately I think will be a good thing, although a sad thing. And I think it's encouraging other alternatives, like the University of Austin is promoting schools like Hillsdale and St. John's and these good places.
Right.
So that's all good. but it's terrible for the Democrats. So in that way, it's good. So, but let me just simplify.
Really? So you really think it will impact them negatively?
Yeah, I think so. They're in a bad spot with it. They're in a bad spot. When they're protesting outside Chuck Schumer's house now.
Yeah. No, I thought kind of cynically that it doesn't make any difference and only conservative outlets are going to push it anyway and CNN's never going to cover it. But then my team, I got a great radio team, they said, you got to understand, this stuff may not be covered by MSNBC and CNN, but the local news is covering it because it causes issues. It causes, traffic, snarl-ups and everything else. And that local news coverage will be really bad for the Democrats. And I think my guys convinced me.
Yeah, like Biden doesn't want this to be the defining vision of the convention in Chicago, right? Does he want like pro Hamas rallies outside of the convention hall?
Oh my gosh, it's gonna get crazy. It is going to get crazy.
So as much as I want it to go out of control to hurt the Democrats, it's also really bad for Jews and our country today. So So it's bad, but politically it's good for us.
How about this provocative question? I had a caller. We are just our listeners, just the best. I mean, conservative listeners. I had a caller coming, a regular calling yesterday. He said, you know what? He's actually really happy, quote, that the Democrats stole the 2020 election. Because without that occurring, we wouldn't have had the last 3 years of them truly revealing who they are. And yes, it's awful, 110,000 fentanyl deaths a year, Riley Gaines murder, the pro-crime policies of Alvin Bragg and everybody else. But there is no. This is like an asteroid-sized red pill that they stole the 2020, and it's the reality of the Democrats is impossible to ignore, given their reign for the last 3.5 years. And that likewise is bad for America on the short term, but could be massively advantageous for patriots who want to save America. What do you think of that?
That's right. Which ties into your Substack, which ties into the last segment we just did, which is I was trying to make the argument that these students and professors at Columbia, they're trying to hold these two things at the same time. And the first is we are oppressed. We're the oppressors. We're the poor, pitiful, oppressed people. And you're the oppressors, right? So we're the oppressed, you're the oppressors. And the elitism of we're so much better than you because we go to Columbia and we go to Yale. So they have to hold these two conflicting things. It's like, we're just the poor little guy and you're putting the cops on us. Ooh. And, oh, we're way better than you people. So how can you have those two things at the same time? And I see your latest Substack is about the party of elitists, which is, I think, the driving force of all of this is their elitism.
Yeah, my latest piece at sebastiangorka.substack.com, I just kind of sat down and I wrote a short list that could have gone on for hours about what this party that has become a white, suburban, metropolis-based, rich elite party that used to say they represented the working class, the minorities, the disenfranchised, what do they represent? And I put this challenge out there. I'm going to put it out there on your show as well. So I wanted anyone who's voting for Biden in November to justify why they're doing so. And they can call in, because these are the things the Democrats have come to represent. They don't represent the downtrodden or the working class. They don't give a crap about those now. They represent what? A war on energy, okay? If you depend on oil and gas, then you are feeling the war on energy that they have deployed since day one of the Biden administration, when he banned the XL Keystone Pipeline extension, banned fracking, banned oil exploration on federal lands, mandated EV vehicles. So number one, the war on affordable energy. Number two, open borders. I don't need to go into that, okay? From the murder of Blake and Riley to 110,000 fentanyl deaths every year, literal open borders for the only developed country in the world. Then we have, as I've mentioned, the pro-crime policies, from releasing illegals who have beaten up NYPD officers on camera, to that Venezuelan illegal being let out onto the streets by Alvin Bragg so he can kill Blake and Riley. Just pro-crime, pro-crime, pro-crime. Then we have the assault on President Trump, the use of lawfare to imprison the leader of the opposition. We see that every single day. Then we see the promotion of perversion when you have, you know, topless trans activists on the South Lawn of the White House. And then we have, you know, the war against average Americans, whether you're a Catholic going to Latin Mass in Richmond, whether you're an anti-abortion activist praying at a Planned Parenthood who gets 11 years in prison. And then lastly, and it's, you know, the list can go on and on and on, helping our enemies, giving billions of dollars to China, giving, you know, $1 billion to Hamas in Gaza. I want somebody who's voting for Joe Biden between 3 and 6 today to call in and tell me how they justify all that. And I'll say the number right now. It is 833-334-6752. That's 833-334-6752. I just want to hear one American justify that to 3.5 million people live on radio. Mike, I don't think they can do it.
No, no. Well, we'll see if they can do it in the voting booth coming in November. The big Supreme Court case today, Dr. Gorka, about presidential immunity. What do you make of this case?
Well, look, if logic is applied, this is not something anyone should be in favor of removing, because whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you want the elected chief executive to do their job for the people for the 4 or 8 years that they are in the White House. The idea that you could sue, you could tie up a president in court every single day and prevent him from exercising the mandate of the people is insane. The Supreme Court has been apparently going in the right direction of late, not just Roe v. Wade, but that incredible audio, I'm sure you played it, of Justice Gorsuch last week, who is mild-mannered guy, avoids the limelight, and when he's debating this unbelievable abuse of Sarbanes-Oxley to put, you know, J6 defendants in prison for decades, and he says, So, Madam Solicitor General, Biden hack, if you interrupt an official proceedings, would that also include pulling a fire alarm as the Congress is about to vote, so we could put a Democrat in prison for 20 years? She's such a cretin, she didn't even, you know, get the reference to fire alarms. But if Neil Gorsuch is prepared to make those kind of statements about the prior case, fingers crossed, God willing, we'll get the right decision in June on all of these cases.
Yeah. Well, last question for you, sir. What was it like talking to Shea Van Fleet on your show?
Oh, she's such a heroine. I mean, a woman who grew up under Mao's communist regime, managed to get out of communist China to America, and then instead of, you know, if you're an immigrant and you've made it out of a hellhole like communist China, you keep your head down, you build a business, you go to work or whatever it is, and instead she stands up at a school board meeting in Northern Virginia and she says, I know what CRT is, I know what political correctness is, and it is communism. I saw this in China. So she's an absolute hero of mine, and her book, Mao's America, is mandatory reading for anybody who wants to save the Republic. So God bless Shea Van Fleet.
It's pretty wild. Every time I hear her talk, she's so like, hey, everyone, this is exactly what we saw. It's wild. I think when we look back on the tyrannies of the past, we think they'll come with a roar. Right. We think it'll be so obvious, but I wonder how obvious in the very beginnings it was to even those people. I don't know.
I don't think it ever is. It's never a switch that is flicked and you go from, you know, freedom to tyranny. It is the frog in the you know, the water that is slowly being increased in temperature. And we just say, oh, well, you know, they just want this and let them have that. And then they just ratchet it up. But it's a ratchet that only moves one way. It only moves to the, you know, diminution of your liberty. That's the only direction the left knows how to move in.
Until
you wake up and say, oh my gosh, it's Venezuela.
Yeah. And maybe I should say, unless we raise more welders and everything that comes with that as well. Dr. Gorka, where can people read your latest piece and call into your radio show?
Yeah, so the pieces, the original pieces are at my Substack. That's my whole name is one word, SebastianGorka.substack.com. I'm on every social media platform except YouTube because they are a bunch of fascists. So just look for Seb Gorka or Sebastian Gorka. 3 to 6 every day, 300 stations across the nation, also live streaming on Rumble. And if you are, if you'd accidentally tune into Mike's show and you're voting for Biden in November, I need you to justify it to me and call in today after 3 o'clock on 833-334-6752 because I need to hear how you're justifying the destruction of America.
Yeah, read the article first. Seb Gorka on the Substack. Dr. Gorka, wonderful to talk to you, sir. An honor.
Thank you, Kaiser.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
I'm American made. I got American parts.
Thanks for listening to Breitbart News Daily. Today on tomorrow's show, we'll talk about the Title IX change that the Biden administration did. That's kind of got lost and all. And we did some immunity talk today. We'll see how the oral arguments went. We'll review that tomorrow. Mike Slater, Breitbart News Daily. Spread the word.